This is Disability Radio Worldwide, a weekly program about the issues, events, and political analysis affecting people with disabilities around the world. Hello and welcome. I'm Jean Parker. This is Disability Radio Worldwide, and this is the sound of the 2004 World Social Forum, which took place in Mumbai, India, from January 16th to 21st. An estimated 100,000 people were in attendance, representing every kind of social movement imaginable, from women's rights groups to indigenous groups, from those fighting for responsible use of land and water to those fighting the cause of Dalits in India. It was all there, and everyone had something to say. Speeches, dancing, drumming, and chanting were everywhere. Processions and demonstrations, sometimes several at a time, crowded the venue. Some having been planned for several months, and others spontaneous expressions of solidarity with one or another social cause. The World Social Forum was originally formed as a response to the World Economic Forum, where issues affecting all of us are discussed behind closed doors. Many national and global economic strategies are put into practice with no input from or knowledge of those who will feel their impact the most. The World Economic Forum is closed to all but the most elite, most privileged players. The World Social Forum, on the other hand, is a place where ordinary people from all spectrums of society can come together to learn from each other and organize for change. Unlike the Economic Forum, the World Social Forum is designed to be a venue for open exchange by those opposed to capitalist and imperialist domination of the world, and by those who are interested in building a world centered on human priorities. However, one difficulty with the World Social Forum has been its lack of inclusion of people with disabilities and disability issues in its work. Disability activists have tried since the beginning of the forum to convince organizers that having sessions on disability issues is necessary and that making the event accessible is also necessary. There has been resistance. But finally, forum organizers agreed that a panel on disability rights would be held. Dr. Anita Guy of New Delhi organized it. At the 2004 event, people with disabilities had a strong presence, holding daily demonstrations and protests in front of the media center to bring attention to the inaccessibility and exclusion by the forum. The message was clear: nothing about us without us. The panel was held on January 18th and consisted of Anita Guy, Javed Abedi, Jean Stewart, Anne Finger, and myself. Today, we'll hear the remarks of Jean Stewart in their entirety as she explains the connections between disability, capitalism, and war. In later programs, we will hear from other speakers on the panel. Here is Anita Guy introducing the panel.
In the last 10 to 15 years or so, in fact, after the declaration of the International Year of the Disabled, worldwide efforts have seen disability rights activists working towards giving a shift to disability from a medical model, you know, which was conceived of in terms of a personal tragedy of the person, and moving towards the social model, which wanted to look at the factors which were inherent in social structures, the inaccessible environment, the issues of communication, and the total and I think complete invisibility of disabled people in any walk of the life, which used to be the scenario, I think, about 20 years back. A lot of water has passed under the bridge since then, as disabled gathered together, found their voice, and wanted to protest in a collective voice, and also make it known to the people, as the panel title of the panel suggests to you, that nothing for us without us. We will not allow anything which is to be planned for us without our inclusion in it. So without spending too much time, may I pass on the mic to the first speaker, who is Jean Stewart. Jean Stewart is a person who's been interested in the disabled prisoners and has formed what is called the Disabled Prisoners Justice Fund in America and has been a disability rights activist of a long standing. She's a writer, and we'll open the questions only after the panelists have finished their presentations.
I want to preface my remarks by saying that I feel a certain unease about lecturing to you about any subject at all because of the implication that I know more than you who are from India. Over the past 3 days since my arrival in India, never in my life have I been more painfully aware of my white skin class privilege as a citizen of the wealthiest nation in the world. I feel I have learned more from you in these 3 short days and grown more in response to meeting you than I have learned and grown in my entire previous 56 years. And for that, I thank you deeply, and I hope that you'll accept my remarks in the spirit of humility in which they are offered. The subject of my remarks is disability, capitalism, and war. Disability, capitalism, and war, what are the links that connect them? I've been a soldier in the peace and justice battle for over 36 years, and I can honestly say that barely a handful of the non-disabled social change activists at whose side I've struggled and sometimes gone to jail would be able to answer that question. Oh, a few might respond that capitalism, in its voracious drive for profits at whatever the cost, has caused an alarming increase in the prevalence of disability among workers, and they'd be right. It's a point I'll elaborate on in a few moments. And of course, they'd point out the obvious, that war creates disability, and capitalism has been known to drive many a war. And that would be true too, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But I propose to examine a deeper structural connection between disability, capitalism, and war, a triad which, by the way, has intense personal relevance for me, for reasons I'll share with you later. If in my remarks I seem to focus disproportionately on the US, it is because the US offers so striking a laboratory in which to observe capitalism run amok. To begin with, disability, unlike race or gender, is not generally thought of as interacting with capitalist social power relations. Rather, it tends to be viewed as a matter for medicine to cure or control. In many countries throughout the world, medical and social welfare institutions have historically held disability to be an individual problem, a personal tragedy or punishment. They blame a disabled person's inability to participate fully in the economic life of society on physiological, anatomical, or mental limitations rather than on economic or social forces. I want to offer an alternative understanding of disability oppression. If we trace how work evolved under capitalism, we can observe its effect on the disabled population. With the advent of capitalism, a major shift occurred in both the social organization of work and the concept of human labor. As human beings were gathered into the factories referred to by William Blake as dark, satanic mills, circumstances arose which became barriers to disabled people's survival. Non-disabled workers had value because as bosses pushed them to produce at an accelerating pace, they generated higher profits. Disabled individuals were less capable of performing the tasks required of factory workers, and thus were viewed as of lesser value. Thus, the operation of the labor market in the 19th century plunged people with disabilities to the bottom of the market. Industrial capitalism created both a class of proletarians and a class of disabled whose bodies did not conform to the standard worker physique and whose labor power was bypassed. Over time, as disabled persons came to be regarded as a social problem, it became justifiable to remove individuals with impairments from mainstream life and segregate them in a variety of institutions. At the same time, capitalism, industrial capitalism, in its grinding push toward productivity at any cost, has caused disabling accidents and conditions at an unprecedented rate. Black lung, brown lung, asbestosis, and a host of other deadly illnesses are the direct offspring of capitalism, along with a chilling litany of incidents in which factory workers have been paralyzed, burned, blinded, deafened, lost limbs, lost physical or mental function, or have otherwise been rendered disabled. Today, repetitive strain injury, or RSI, debilitates hundreds of thousands of office workers, accounting for 66% of all reported U.S. work-related illnesses in 1999. While capitalism shunted disabled persons out of the worker pool and into institutions, the medical industry pathologized traits such as blindness, deafness, and physical and mental impairments that have naturally appeared in the human race throughout history. Medical isolation became a means of social control, and institutions of all descriptions became formidable containment devices. It is now one of the disability rights movement's primary revolutionary goals to reverse this trend. The impact on disabled people of this kind of segregation has been profound. Of course, we have to acknowledge that disabled people live on the economic margins of all societies throughout the world, not merely in capitalist countries. But nowhere is the jarring disconnect between a society's vast wealth and its refusal to provide more than the barest means of survival for its most vulnerable citizens more stunning than in the U.S., the world's richest nation. And let us not forget capitalism's global tentacles. As the U.S., under the North American Free Trade Agreement, has shifted large segments of American manufacturing to countries where labor costs are minimal and occupational safety and health standards non-existent, poor people around the planet working for U.S. corporations are becoming disabled, either through injury or illness resulting from exposure to toxic materials, at an unprecedented rate. Additionally, the structural adjustment policies of the World Bank are forcing countries under its control to gut their disability social service programs in the name of cost cutting, resulting in the further impoverishment of disabled persons worldwide. Although disabled people in the U.S. have been excluded from the labor force through economic discrimination and compulsory unemployment, the so-called unproductive ones shore up U.S. capitalism by other means. By clever capitalist alchemy, disability has been spun into big business. When a single disabled body generates $30,000 to $82,000 in annual revenues, Wall Street brokers count that body as an asset, which contributes to, for example, a nursing home chain's net worth. Disabled people in the U.S. are worth more to the gross domestic product when occupying institutional beds than we are in our own homes.
This is Disability Radio Worldwide, and this is the sound of a traditional stick dance, one of the hundreds of cultural performances at the 2004 World Social Forum held in Mumbai, India. Now we'll continue with remarks made by Jean Stewart at the World Social Forum first ever panel on disability rights.
Such commercial enterprises are staffed by a hierarchy of professionals who depend upon the class of disabled people to survive. Michael Oliver writes, quote, "Under capitalism, the production of the category of disability is no different from the production of motor cars or hamburgers. Each industry has a workforce which has a vested interest in producing its product in particular ways and in exerting as much control over the process of production as possible." This observation is critical to disabled people's liberation. Who controls the services, what those services are, and where they are rendered are major issues in disabled people's struggle for self-determination. The myth promoted by neoliberalism that charity is a realistic substitute for entitlements has served to justify the evisceration of social service entitlement programs generally. In the US, this slashing of disability social programs and services has hugely accelerated in a post-9/11 terrorism-obsessed climate. It is disingenuous of a government as wealthy as the US to claim that the money for those social service programs which maintain disabled citizens at a bare level of poverty is simply not there. We all know it's there, and we all know how it's being spent on the waging of global war. So what can we say about war and its connection to disability? On the most basic level, the relationship is one of simple cause and effect. A state which wages war generates disability, not only for soldiers on both sides of the conflict, but for civilians as well. And not only the obvious war injuries, but post-traumatic stress disorder and illness resulting from exposure to toxic substances. These immediate impacts might be thought of as, quote, "the gift that keeps on giving," for generations to come, by which I mean that sometimes, as in the case of depleted uranium weapons and landmines, the injuries and toxic exposure don't end when the conflict ends. The act of war destroys infrastructure. When you bomb bridges and roads and hospitals, people can no longer get the medical care they need, leading to illness and disability. War creates refugees as houses are destroyed, leaving people homeless or living in squalid refugee camps. Rape, a common war crime, leaves behind its own war ravages, both physical and psychological. On a societal level, war sweeps whole nations into pervasive anxiety, fear, depression, and grief. There are less immediate effects as well. War plunders the economies of the countries engaged in it. Social support programs and entitlements are gutted as military budgets swell. I promised in my intro to share with you the reason why this has such personal resonance for me. In 1969, I was hired by a large multinational pharmaceutical company to conduct agrochemical research. My job was to test the effects of various herbicides on plants. Each day, I weighed out powders and liquids labeled only with code numbers. Sometimes they spilled on my hands. Sometimes I breathed the noxious fumes. One day I stumbled upon a well-kept secret. This company was under contract with the U.S. Department of Defense for the provision of defoliants in Vietnam. I quit my job in outrage. Many years later, I began to read the first published accounts of the effects of the defoliant Agent Orange on U.S. military personnel and on Vietnamese civilians. More years passed before I began to experience piercing pains in my right hip. When I was finally examined by a doctor in 1975, he wanted to admit me to the hospital that same day for removal of a large tumor mass from my hip muscle tissue. The tumor kept recurring, each time more aggressively. When I went under the knife for the third time, most of my right hip muscle and part of my pelvic bone were removed, followed by radiation, followed by rehabilitation. I started using crutches in 1978 and a wheelchair in 1980. 10 years ago, an environmental biochemist familiar with research on this form of tumor confirmed what I had long suspected. "There's no question," he said, "that the herbicide exposure was linked to my tumor." I tell this story by way of explaining why, though I never joined the military, though I in fact organized an anti-war student organization on my college campus in 1967 and have been doing similar work ever since, I now self-identify as a survivor. I do not use the word victim. A survivor of the U.S. capitalist military-industrial complex. On some level, I believe we are all, everyone in this room, survivors of capitalism. But as for people with disabilities, in any country you can name, we as a category, and I choose this pronoun we with some trepidation, aware, as I mentioned before, of my white skin, middle-class northern privilege, we as a category are a profoundly oppressed and marginalized population. People with disabilities are the canaries in the global coal mines. The conditions under which we live present a barometer by which one can measure the degree of enlightenment of any society. The situation of many of my disabled sisters and brothers is comparable to that of prisoners, in that large numbers of us are imprisoned in institutions not of our choosing, or are imprisoned in our homes. Like prisoners, people with disabilities are poor, live in substandard housing or no housing, are uneducated or undereducated, are unemployed or underemployed, and like prisoners, we get a hell of a lot of bad press. We are consistently portrayed in the media and in popular culture through caricature and stereotype, thus depriving us of our multidimensional selves, our dignity, our humanity. We are, in fact, portrayed as prisoners. But the media invariably gets it wrong, for we are not prisoners of our bodies, our wheelchairs, our deaf ears, our blind eyes. We are prisoners of society's bigotry, of capitalism's segregationism. The hurt that I have found most punishing, though, is not popular culture's insulting image of us. It's that you, our non-disabled sisters and brothers fighting for social change, you have bought into this image. You've left us to fight our battles alone. While our people continue to organize alongside you in every social and environmental justice movement on the planet, you've joined in the suffocating chorus of silence when we've needed your support. Instead of recognizing our struggle as that of an oppressed minority, side by side with struggles around race, gender, class, etc. You've accepted the prevailing offensive medical model of us as people in need of a cure. We have felt at times discouraged and betrayed by your failure to engage our cause. The fact that the World Social Forum is so egregiously inaccessible to us, the fact that the physical site is virtually unnavigable for our wheelchairs, that no attempt has been made to provide printed conference materials in an alternative format for people who are low vision or blind. The fact that this sign language interpreter you see here today is the first and only interpreter you will see at the entire WSF speaks volumes about the degree to which we've been marginalized, even by you, our own comrades. I propose that we, here in this room, together, declare an end to this politics of exclusion. I propose that we forge common cause here, today, starting now. Our enemy is great, and we haven't much time. A better world is accessible. Thank you.
You've been listening to remarks made by Jean Stewart at the 2004 World Social Forum in Mumbai, India. We'll leave you with the sound of one of the many demonstrations held at the forum, this one by children. I'm Jean Parker. You have been listening to Disability Radio Worldwide. Many thanks to Radio for Peace International of Costa Rica, the Independent Living Institute of Sweden, and the Public Welfare Foundation for their generous support in making this program possible. Additional contributions from you, our listeners, are always welcome. Program cassettes are available for purchase. For information about purchasing cassettes and to look at our program catalog, please visit our website at www.independentliving.org/radio. You can also write to us at Disability Radio Worldwide, Post Office Box 200567, Denver, Colorado, 80220, USA. Again, the address is Disability Radio Worldwide, Post Office Box 200567, Denver, Colorado, 80220, USA. Our email address is global3@concentric.net.